everyone. I'd like to call the House Committee on Rules to order. Today is Monday, February 6th. We have two items on our agenda today. We will not be introducing any committee measures today, but we have a work session on House Bill 4153 and an informational meeting on proposed changes to the House chamber rules. We're going to start off. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 4153. This work session is for the purpose of considering referral of House Bill 4153 as amended to Ways and Means with route recommendation as to the passage of the bill. We have a dash one amendment, colleagues. The goal here is to do we need a summary?
I can. I prepared it and uploaded it for everyone. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the dash one amendment to House Bill 4153 replaces the measure in its entirety. It approves Oregon Health Authority's proposal for coordinated care organizations. It permits OHA and the Department of Consumer and Business Services to enter into agreements regarding disclosure of information held by DCBS for specified use by OHA. Prohibits the COs from discriminating in participation or reimbursement of health care providers. Requires quarterly reporting by OHA to the legislature during the period of transition to a coordinated care model. It updates statutory references and makes a couple of other technical changes, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Thank you, Cheyenne. And for those of you who are following healthcare transformation, the dash one amendment is identical to Senate Bill 1580. Vice Chair Berger.
Madam Chair, Chair Kotek, I move that we adopt the dash one amendments dated February 3rd, 2012 to House Bill 4153.
Thank you. Vice Chair Berger moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated February 3rd, 2012 to House Bill 4153. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Not. The amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Berger.
Chair Kotek, I move House Bill 4153 as we just amended and without recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Berger moves House Bill 4153 as amended with the dash ones and without recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Well, the clerk will call the roll. Let's go ahead and do a roll call vote, please. Thank you.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Esselstyn?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Aye. Co-Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson? Excused? Aye. Motion passes. And close the work session. Thank you, colleagues.
That's quick.
That I'd like to open an informational meeting.
Clear out.
On proposed changes to House Chamber Rules 3.20 and 3.21. Colleagues, if you'll recall, we had proposed amendment to the House Chamber Rules on the floor on opening day, and with us today is the proponent of that measure and also a colleague. So, Representative Mitch Greenlake, Representative Gene Wisman, would you like to join us? And does everyone have a copy, I believe, in front of you of proposed amendments to the House Rules? This is regarding conflict of interest and how we handle that.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlake, House District 33, currently Northwest Portland, out to North Plains. We'll change some. I've voted for the House rules, I think, six times, and it finally came to me what a what a basic problem there is in the House rules, and I voted against it on the floor in opening session. In the day of transparency in government and clean government, the notion that our rules not only allow somebody with a stated actual pecuniary conflict of interest to our rules, not only allows them to vote, it requires them to vote. And that seems to me beyond the pale. I would urge you to consider this and to move an amendment to the House rules to the floor before the end of this session, as soon as handy, because it seems to me too important now to straighten out this problem. You have in front of you a specific proposal, and that proposal calls for somebody with an actual conflict of interest, not a possible one, but an actual pecuniary conflict of interest on a bill, to declare that conflict and to ask the body to allow that person not to vote. That would then require a two-thirds majority of the body to allow that person not to vote on the bill. This language came to me after working with our chief clerk, as her suggestion, not because she supports this proposal, but because she thinks if we do change the existing rules, this is an appropriate way to change it after checking in with other chambers. The main concern with allowing people not to vote in a conflict of interest is that would allow people to frivolously avoid a vote on a bill that for one reason or another they didn't want to vote on. And this provides a safeguard that the body protects the privilege of not voting by allowing that only to happen after a two-thirds vote of the body. But it does provide a mechanism for a person with a conflict to at least ask to be excused from their requirement that they vote under the House rules. It seems to me a reasonable solution. There could be other solutions, and I'd be happy to support any solution to this model, other proposals. But the important thing, it seems to me, is to move away from the situation where our rules require somebody, even with a significant conflict of interest, to vote on a bill. I mean, it just seems to me completely inappropriate. So there I am. I urge you, beg you to think about moving forward on this before the end of this session, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Do you have time to remain with us?
Yes, I do.
I'd like to have Representative Wisnett make his comments.
I don't have anything important, just to help chair.
Well, if we could have Representative Wisnett, then we'll go to questions.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairs Olson and Kotek and honorable colleagues, I'm State Representative Gene Wisnett, House District 53. I'm here today, you've got a copy of what I'm going to say, but I'm here today to testify for a change to our House rules concerning conflicts of interest. I'm proud to have served as an elected official in the House of Representatives. I'm also proud of my 27 years in the nation as a member of the Armed Forces. During my service in both of these honorable institutions, I've worked to assure the highest integrity and respect of the people being served. I think it was testified the other day in one committee that I believe the House of Representatives currently has more respect of the people, and especially our federal colleagues. And I'm hoping that my suggestion helps us at least maintain the people's trust. Representative Mitch Greenlee and I are dorm mates, not roommates, dorm mates. And we've been talking about this subject for the last year or so about, and I salute him in bringing forth his suggestion. I wasn't willing to take on our chief clerk at this time, so she made a strong argument discussing Representative Greenlee's suggestion about not voting, and you know that may be where we need to go, colleagues, on this issue. But you know we're citizens legislators, and we do expect our members to have other employment, which may result in potential actual conflicts of interest on votes. Thus, we expect members to express potential actual conflicts of interest. So you have it here in writing, but basically, if you look at House Rule 321-2 today, it says that a member declares it says if you have a potential conflict, then you have the alternative to put that in the record, explain it. And my proposal today doesn't go quite as far as my colleague's suggestion about not voting, but I think at least we need to clear it up. If you have an actual conflict of interest, the member shall file in writing a description of that actual conflict with the chief clerk or the committee assistants by 5 p.m. the next session day following the vote. So right now we don't even, the chief clerk says it's assumed that's potential means potential and actual, but it doesn't address that. The rule now just says that you put it for potential, and it doesn't address an actual conflict of interest. So we have an actual conflict of interest. I think it's good for the trust of the people that we put that in record, what your actual conflict is and what, I use the word description versus right now you just have to you limit it to the substance of the oral explanation you gave on the floor. So when Mr. Representative Freeman says, you know, he has a business that he hates ethanol or something like that, it hurts his business. So I think it's something that, again, my objective here is to be sure that we maintain the people's trust. when we're making our votes, and that we describe our actual conflicts of interest.
Thank you, Representative.
I'd be glad to take questions. Thank you for the time to testify.
Thank you for being here. I see Representative Garrett, Barnhart, Berger. Oh, just my right side? Garrett, Barnhart, Berger.
I can't recall if this came up on the floor debate on Wednesday. If it did, I apologize because I've forgotten. But did you talk about is there a majority rule in chambers around the country? Are we an outlier in how we deal with this issue?
I asked the chief clerk who asked around, and her answer was she didn't exactly take account, but that there were some legislative bodies that still required a vote even with a conflict. There were some legislative bodies that automatically barred a vote, and then it seemed to me the majority of them had something or another that controlled when a vote ought to happen or when not happen, but she didn't have an exact number across them.
Follow-up, Representative?
Not right now.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. A follow-up on that, and then a couple of questions of my own, if I may. I don't expect you to know the answer to this, but I'll
make it up.
Thank you. I wonder if some of those chambers that do either automatically bar or allow people not to vote have different majority requirements for passing legislation than we do. Our requirement, of course, is that you have 31 votes or a higher number if the Constitution requires. And that would be regardless of whether somebody was barred from voting or chose not to vote or not. And that would be an interesting thing to know. I mean, I know some of the older legislatures have a requirement that a majority of those present and voting are required, and that's a very different rule than the one we have.
I don't know the specific answer, but I do know what our chief clerk said was that they generally follow Mason under the rules, which I think is usually a simple majority. But I do not know the answer to that.
All right, thank you. And if I could change topics, thank you. I'm looking at the definition you have for actual conflict of interest, and I'm, as a guy who works with taxes, I think about these tax laws. When we passed a law or bill that became Measure 66 in 2009, I would suspect, I don't know for certain, that there were a fair number of people in the House who would be affected by the outcome of that vote directly and personally and in a private pecuniary benefit or detriment, as you've got here. And maybe I'm stating or asking the question in a way of stating the obvious, but I wonder if that makes it impossible for the legislature to change some of the tax laws because of the requirement that we have 36 votes on those kinds of measures or 31 votes in the event of a reduction of revenue.
I asked our chief clerk that question. These definitions that come right out of our statutes, those are the existing definitions of conflict of interest. She said the issue has to do with the extent to which one is a member of a class as opposed to an individual, either outside of a class or in a very small class. And one of the questions came up, Co-Speaker Roland asked me to check in, could we vote on legislative salaries because we're a member of a class that would be directly affected? And our chief clerk's answer is that that's a large enough class so that we could vote on them. And I think in terms of tax preparers, that's a much larger.
And a follow-up on that, if I may?
Yes. Chair,
thank you. Could you point out the language in here that refers to this class exception that you're talking about? I don't see it, but it may just be that I haven't read it carefully enough.
I don't have the language in front of me, but...
Unless it's in the ORS.
Didn't bring the book.
Yeah, I don't have the statute with me.
Well, if I may, Madam Chair, I'm not referring to the statute. I'm referring to what the rule contains. I understand that the statute that applies to other people's conflicts of interest or the statutes that apply to the ethics rules or the ethics laws are quite different from our rules, and it would seem to me that if it's not in the rules, it's not here.
The rules
but the plain language of this the plain language of sub 4, actual conflict of interest, doesn't contain anything about a class, as far as I can see.
I'm sorry, I'd have to ask the chief clerk on that.
Yeah.
This references the statute, and the intention was to reference it directly out of the statute.
Well, if the chief clerk wanted to join us to talk about the interplay between us referencing the statute and actually having it in the rules, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, I think that probably answers my question. I've missed the reference to the statute.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Berger.
Thanks. Mitch. Representative Greenlee. You and I have been in this place the same amount of years.
We've
sat through every one of those four speeches.
Can you reference for me, without hurting anybody's feelings, because what we do on the floor is a public meeting, a specific example that you can say, I wish this person, when they stood up and gave a conflict announcement, I wish they would have been barred from voting?
Let me be specific and general enough. So I saw one place where it was really clear that there were people who were worried about something with a conflict of interest had to do with the Metolius bill, where there were members of the legislature who, at least it was reported in public, had a very specific interest in that because of having property inside the area to be an area of special state concern. I think that's the example that came to mind very quickly.
What about something, and I'm going to call out a colleague of mine, if you'll indulge me, Madam Chair, because I have a series of things. A few sessions ago, I had a bill that substantially changed the workings of the Oregon Bottle Bill, and it had a very specific impact on every, say, Coke distributor in the body, and there was conflict announced. Would that have fit under this, that you would have said that if we changed the bottle bill and you're a distributor of beer or liquor, that you should be excluded from voting? I mean, is that what you're trying to get at?
I think that's a pretty large class.
Actually, it's a pretty small subset of people who are directly distributing those things.
Well, it's a small number of people in the body, but that person is a member of a very large class of distributors of soft drink. I think it would not, in fact, bar that person from voting on this bill.
Can I make one other comment about this? I think I like Representative Wisnett's look at this better. In other words, the write it down piece rather than the bar it, because I'm a little concerned. Did you read the Oregonian this weekend, the editorial cartoon? Did you see it where they...
Yeah.
It was adorable, where they took our simple, here's how a bill becomes law, cartoonish thing and redid it to it was just a reminder to all of us who live in this complex system to the rest of the world, our rules look bizarre, arcane, unknowable, and incomprehensible. And I'm a little worried that in this proposal you're even adding another twist in there where we'll sit on the floor and argue over whether somebody should be barred from speaking and have a 3/5 vote over that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, it seems to me we ought to be erring on the side of caution. I really believe people are uncomfortable voting in a situation where they have a conflict of interest. We give them no out at all. And in the legal profession, this is very clearly defined in terms of judges and attorneys and various other things. And I think, I mean, it seems to me if I had a direct conflict, I would want to wait not to vote. And it just seems really odd declaring it and then going ahead and voting. I mean, so my argument is we should find a way where that person has an out and doesn't have to vote. This isn't trying to stop somebody from voting in my mind. This is giving somebody the opportunity not to vote when they really feel they have a very direct conflict of interest. I think this is a pretty rare event. I don't think this is a common event. In fact, I think one of the problems we've had, because it's not been clear up till now, is you get people saying, well, my third cousin is a school teacher, and therefore I have a conflict of interest on the education budget. I mean, that demeans the very notion of what a conflict of interest really is. So my sense is this would be a very narrow definition, and it would simply give somebody the opportunity to say to the body, please give me the option not to vote. The body could say to them, no way, we accept where you are, and you go ahead and vote.
And just to clarify, your rule change is about an actual conflict.
It's actual, not a it's actual, which is defined as a direct pecuniary conflict of interest.
Yeah, well, but I would submit that the changes to the bottle bill had a direct pecuniary influence on somebody who had a Coke dealership in the state of Oregon, that would have been a clear case where you could say, yeah, this bill, my business.
And that person ought to be able to ask whether they can be excused from the vote on the basis of that conflict.
And I guess if I could just pursue this one more, and I'm done. I gave my floor speech on California and their all vote who care to vote. I think that the place that these things are best brought forward is in the political sphere when we all run for re-election. And I think we should declare our potential or actual and tell the world, and I would even ask that it be written down if that's important enough, where the bill and our interests intersect. I think that transparency is important. But, Representative, I was sent here to vote. And I have made some really tough votes over the years, and I don't want to open the door to anybody to get out of the tough votes. Even if we sit around and argue on the floor, and that's what I'm worried about your proposal would be, as
my
to whether...
a non-debatable motion.
Well, but... you understand. It adds another wrinkle to our already complex system. So I I'm not going to support this, but I do appreciate what you're trying to get at, and we'll talk about campaign limits, my favorite subject, at another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I did have Representative Esquivel next, but I'll wait for him to return. Other comments or questions for our distinguished colleagues? If I could, I want to talk about Representative Wisnett's suggestion. So just so I make sure I understand this, right now, our rules just say if you have a potential conflict, you file, you must submit something by next session day on the substance of the oral explanation. I didn't realize it was that limited. So if you don't say something on the floor that day, whatever you write and submit for the record is just whatever you said on the floor currently? Is that your
Madam Chair, I sent this to the House Clerk, and that's her comment was, all our rules state they may file a description for a potential conflict. I think it has always been unspoken. It also applies to actual. I think the emphasis should be on the requirement that as an explanation must be filed. That is not an option. So my language is saying that I think, you know, we could put up there a statement of the nature of the actual and potential conflict. But I would still like to let's change it where the last sentence says it's limited to the substance of the oral explanation on the floor, and I think that should be more descriptive of what the actual conflict is.
For the purposes of transparency, to actually know what that is. Thank you, Representative. That's helpful.
And again, I would like to come, mm-hmm. Madam
yes.
Chair, since, you know, and I think Representative Berger has made some good points. I also think that my colleague here, Representative Greenlee, has studied this, and I don't think it's any one of us are trying to go after anyone. It's we're trying to be sure that we're transparent in the voters, and I take Kirk, Representative Berger's comment about maybe that's the political, but I think it's we have a real responsibility to be sure that the people understand that we have what these conflicts are, and we're gonna make if the decision is we keep voting, we make that vote, but here's the actual, so you know why. That there is an actual, I'm concerned about the actual conflict.
Thank you. And Representative Greenlee, if your thoughts on Representative Wisnett's suggestion as potentially a next step, although I know you want more.
I think it would be a useful one, except the problem is it make it even more embarrassing the more one has to file an extended explanation for putting it on the record might make it even more apparent how odd our rules are. But, yeah, I think it would be an improvement.
Mm-hmm. So Representative Esquivel's question was answered, even though he hasn't had a chance to return. Representative Barnhart?
Yeah, I was going to ask Representative Wisnett's proposal if the assumption is that these written descriptions would be inserted in the record in some way. Right now, for example, the fact that someone stated a conflict, I think, if they said it on the floor, it's inserted in the journal. I assume that it's inserted in the committee minutes now, if it's stated in committee.
Is there any other kind?
I don't know what your proposal contemplates.
Madam Chair, again, I'm deferring to the House Clerk. My desire is that they be made a record. It's in for the public to have access to it, whether it's committee meetings or, and I would not probably want to require it be on the floor if it's going to be a long explanation. I don't want to be on the floor. We want to expedite our time on the floor to the maximum, so you would still just declare a potential and just give them a statement now that's a potential because of my business, da-da-da, but then it should be explained in more detail in the record of the vote or the record of the committee. That would be my desire, but recommendation to this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Beyer.
Yeah, something jogged my thought process a little bit, and that is, has this rule been a constant since we began meeting how many years ago?
No, it turns out it's not. The rule used to require somebody not to vote, and I think the basic form where we are now came in something like the mid-80s to try and deal with some other problems, apparently. So, it has not always been. It's been for a while, but not forever.
So I find that interesting that you brought that up, Representative Greenleck, that you say you think it changed in the mid-80s or so. Well, I guess I'll have to do a little bit of homework. Or I'd be really curious to find out what was going on back then.
Well, I think I think that this is why the chief clerk said that we change it, we ought to change it this way. I think the conflict of interest rule was being used frivolously to avoid voting on things you didn't want to vote for. And I think that, I'm not sure, but I think that's what Ramona and I talked about, and that this was to take away the ability to have somebody use the conflict of interest rule to not vote 31 times during a session on bills they didn't want to vote on. So this sort of notion of requiring the body to give you approval, I think that probably wouldn't happen 30 times in a session. And that was another way to offset the original problem. But I think that was the problem that was trying to be solved.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions or comments for our colleagues?
Can I just thank you, gentlemen, for bringing this up? Mitch, thank you. It needs to be constantly looked at, and you and I may not totally agree on the solution, but I think we agree on the problem.
And
I'd be happy to work with you to find the right solution.
Yeah, and I would say I concur with Vice Chair Berger in that, you know, we are here to come and do the people's business and vote, although I think you're making some very good points about transparency and how we clarify that, and in some cases allowing a member not to vote at all if it's a very, very clear conflict. I think the complexity of the issue in changing our rules in this session, given that we have just, you know, broached the topic, I think it'd be a hard thing to do, but I, you know, would be open to a work group of this committee to work with you two in the interim to talk about, let's look at this some more, let's maybe understand what, you know, you've done some research, but to get some more folks involved and see, and maybe come back in 2013 and say, let's look at this one more time. But I think, you know, given the time frames we have, that might be a hard thing to do, unless someone wanted to entertain strictly the change that Representative Wisnett is recommending, because that is, I think, a clarification of existing rule.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could. Mm-hmm. The reason I thought it would be useful in this session, and I would think it would be useful even if it gets to the floor the very last day of the session, it's because that would put it into the rules that were the beginning of the discussions for the 2013 session. If not, I mean, I think the time to think about it would be to do work getting ready for the creation of the 2013 rules. But they usually start with the ones you have in place, and it would seem to me it would be useful to put this in place, even if we didn't do it until the very end of this session. It would get it into the base that began the discussion in 2013, and then it could go either way, but it would seem to me it would put it, it would tee it up in a way for the 2013 session that made sense.
Representative.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Greenleg has brought up a good point, and that I know that Representative Olson, myself, and I think Arnie Roblin, we worked on a group and did bring it forth so it, for the next session, so it would be in 2013 on the birthday cards or the how to use, right, you know, some things like that, whether it was legal, the campaign or the official. We brought forth some suggestions that the leadership then did put in the House rules about that. So that I would, if your committee is not willing to move either suggestion for this session, then I would recommend that it be prepared early enough to be in place for 2013, as the representative suggested.
And I'd also like to say, when you name Representative Berger's work group on campaign finance reform, I'd like to be a part of that.
Duly noted. Well, we could bring this topic up with the presiding officers, because perhaps this should be a House and Senate conversation as well. I'm not familiar with their conflict of interest rules, but getting to the further transparency discussion. Well, I know Co-Chair Olson and I would like to hear from members, you know, your feedback on this hearing today and whether or not we can proceed on any of this, but, and also your willingness to serve on any kind of interim group that looks further into the topic. So, and thank you both for being here and bringing it forward. If there's nothing else for the day, we have a committee meeting tomorrow. The topic of the informational tomorrow is a discussion about statues in the U.S. Capitol, particularly as they could relate to new people having statues in the U.S. Capitol. We'll be hearing from two colleagues. Anything else? We might have a potential committee measure for introduction tomorrow. If that, I think that is it. And thank you all. We're adjourned. Putting a statue.